All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Dale Thronberry.
And good evening, world, and welcome to Veterans Radio. My name is Dale Thronberry, CW2 type, Army helicopter pilot, 1969. And I want to welcome you to Veterans Radio today, and especially to all the veterans out there, all the men and women who have protected all of us for so many years and centuries here in America. Without you, we wouldn't be here and we wouldn't be able to do our program every day. And so we're very excited about that. Today we've got a wonderful program, and I think it's really to your benefit to make sure that you stay tuned, because we're going to be talking to Dr. Charles Hoag, Colonel, Doctor, United States Army retired. He has written an amazing book entitled Once a Warrior, Always a Warrior, and the subtitle is Navigating the Transition from Combat to Home, including combat stress, PTSD, and TBI, or traumatic brain injury. So we want to make sure that you stick around for that. And then at the very end of the program, I've got this most talented young lady I have ever heard, I think, a singer who has recorded a song called Promise that we're going to play at the end of the program. It's about a young woman whose father goes off to war. And I think that you're going to love the song, and I think you're going to love Sarah Stevens is her name. And it's just a fantastic song, and I'll advise you as we get closer to that, make sure you have your handkerchiefs with you because you're going to need them. I think this woman is a talent that's going to be amazing out there. The other thing is that we have to make sure that we have the idea of a couple of things going on. Joining me in the studio tonight, as my phone went off, I apologize to everybody out there. Tom Wright. Welcome back to Veterans Radio.
Thank you, Dale. Happy to be here and thrilled to be a continued part of Veterans Radio. It's a great service to our community.
It is a great service to the community. And speaking of community, last week, of course, was Veterans Day, and I think it was Veterans Week. And I was telling somebody, some of my friends and my family, I said, well, you know, it's my busy time. And there were so many events going on, and I just wanted to kind of tell our audience a little bit about some of the things that went on in our local area. So we started off on Monday at the University of Michigan. I had a week-long program for veterans that was really fantastically organized, and I'm sorry that I didn't get to see everything. But they had a panel of Vietnam veterans on Monday. Then they had a panel of Korean veterans on Tuesday, I think it was. Then they had a panel of Iraq-Afghanistan veterans. They had a fundraiser on Wednesday night on the actual Veterans Day. And just the whole week, student veterans organizations were very active. And I love the way that these student veterans organizations are coming to the forefront. It's a great way. The business school at U of M had a seminar for entrepreneurs who wanted help in getting their businesses off the ground. And I thought that was just cool. All the things that they did there, they did it at Washtenaw Community College. They dedicated a new student veteran center there, Concordia College. And I didn't get to go to that one, so tell me what happened at Concordia College.
Concordia had a great full day worth of events. They had people from World War II, the Concordia Choir, and basically focusing on the many conflicts of war and having speakers throughout the whole segue of the 20th century of our conflict. So very well done.
I know. And theirs runs a whole day.
Yes.
It started at 11 o'clock or something like that.
Yes, it did run for the whole day. And in addition to what they do, Lutheran Hour Ministries is on the Armed Forces Radio with their national speaker, Reverend Gregory Seltz, a local guy who went to school with me in Dearborn.
Okay. All right. Well, I think it's great that all of these organizations are out there. And we were talking about this earlier before we came on the air about how many more people are getting involved in supporting their veterans and active military people today. You know, I don't like to go back and talk about what happened then. What's nice now is that everybody seems to be very interested in this 1%. This is the most important 1%ers that we've got out there. The 1% of the population is actively involved in the military today, and they're the ones that are protecting us all over the world. And it's, as a result of some of the things that occurred in Paris on Friday night, I'm sure that it's going to become even more actively involved around the world. And our prayers and our hopes are always with these men and women and their families. It's you know, we can't be the policemen for all of the world, but we seem to have to set the I don't know what the term is I'm looking for. Set the role model for the rest of the world, because some of the things that I heard during the week were from a World War II veteran, especially, was, no, we can't stop evil everywhere, but we have to be the ones to show them that we will. And that, you know, we, our country, is based on all of these freedoms that we have that nobody else in the world has. And I don't think many of us realize that. You know, when we look around the rest of the world, every country out there doesn't have what we have. And I think that it's so important that we give thanks for the all of the things that we have here. You know, we complain about health care. We complain about this. We complain about that. But I would rather be here than anyplace else. And I think most everybody agrees with that one, because we are very fortunate that even though we don't agree on everything, at least we don't go to war with each other when we don't agree. And I think that that's what's important, is that at least we can have respect for each other's opinions. And maybe somewhere down the line we'll get back to the idea where a little compromising may help out a little bit. That's my political triumph for today. And now I'm going to talk about some upcoming events that are happening. I just got an email before I got here today from the VA. Surprise, surprise. They have sent out a new thing that just says, when you're in, you're in. And what does that mean? Well, it means that once you are signed up to participate in the VA system, you are in, and you have every right to go to any VA hospital around the country and receive the care that you are entitled to. So all of you men and women out there who have not signed up for the VA because, oh, I don't need it, I don't, you know, I don't need that kind of health care, and so on and so forth, well, maybe somewhere down the line you might need a little extra help. And, the VA is kind of positioned to take care of some of the unusual health issues that veterans have. And I think that it would be important for you to do that. Now, of course, you always need to have your DD-214. That's your Department of Defense. It's your discharge papers. It's got where you were, when you were there, all the awards you're entitled to, that you have an honorable discharge, and so forth. So you need to get a hold of that. And you can get a hold of one of those on our website, veteransradio.net, and click on the we've got a link there to get your DD-214. And so we encourage you to do that. It's a great way for people to know that veterans are out there and that they get that they're getting the care that they deserve, because we hear all these terrible stories about what goes on at the VA, and I think sometimes I think about 90% of them are made up. Tom?
Yes. I also got an email from the VA this week, and to show what good the VA is doing, nationally the VA has formed a partnership with the Bob Woodruff Foundation.
Oh.
And as a result of that partnership, hold on, and there will be new funding from that foundation to benefit our veterans. And the Woodruff Foundation, I went to their event in New York. They raised over $7 million on Tuesday, November 10th. And they want to continue to help veterans. And remember, the Woodruff family is from Michigan, so they got a special eye on us.
Well, remind people who Bob is.
Bob is the ABC News journalist who was in Iraq and suffered a brain injury when part of his skull was taken out when he was driving in Iraq and a bomb went off near his vehicle.
Right, and so everybody, his wife Lee was on Veterans Radio, I can't remember exactly what it was. To talk about the foundation and what they are doing to help veterans and so forth. So there's a lot of different organizations out there. And remember, we always encourage you folks to let us know what activities you have so that we can tell the rest of the world that you should get involved with, you know, with this particular group or that particular group. And so, yeah, just send me an email. Send it to dale@veteransradio.net, and we will be more than happy to talk about your organization on the air. The other place that I mentioned earlier was to find your DD-214 is that you can find it at thelifechest.com. And these are the people that are making these amazing fancy footlockers, I guess is the way that I look at them all the time. And you can keep all of your military needs and goods in there, your DD-214, your medals, your boots, your, you know, whatever else that you value from your time in the military. And it's a great place to put all your things instead of in a shoebox in the corner. And it's so go to our website, check out thelifechest.com. I think you'll find it interesting. All right, finally, the last thing is Hockey Night in Michigan is coming up. And Hockey Night, this is for it's a fundraiser for the Michigan Warriors, a veterans organization. And they are going to be playing the Detroit Red Wings. That's not easy to say. How does Ken Cal do that all the time? The Detroit Red Wings alumni on Saturday, November 21st. So this is the Michigan Warriors at the John Lindell Ice Arena in Royal Oak, Michigan. And the doors open at 5:15. And there's a 50-50 raffle, silent auction, hockey sticks, pucks, gloves, things autographed by the Red Wings, Warrior merchandise. Tickets are on sale at michiganwarriors.eventbrite.com. Eventbrite, Brite.com. So go check that out. Hockey Night in America. And I don't know if Don Cherry will be there or not, but it might be fun if he was. I'd love to see what he was wearing. All right. So enough of the news for that right now. We're going to move right along. We're going to be taking a break right now. And when we come back, we'll be talking to Dr. Charles Hoag, MD, Colonel Retired, United States Army. His book is entitled Once a Warrior, Always a Warrior. You're listening to Veterans Radio. We'll be right back. And a belated happy birthday to the United States Marine Corps. You thought I forgot, didn't you? Well, I didn't. Joining me, you never forget with the Marines because they'll never let you forget, which is okay. Coming up right now on Veterans Radio, our guest is Dr. Charles Hoag, who's a nationally known expert on PTSD and traumatic brain injury and other psychological reactions to war, as well as treatment strategies for war-related conditions. His expertise spans psychology, trauma, public health, health policy, infectious disease, all kinds of things. He's worked at Walter Reed. He has spent a tour in Iraq. He has been writing about post-traumatic stress disorder for a number of years, and I think that this is going to be a great opportunity to talk about some of the things that we've been talking about on Veterans Radio for years and years. And I encourage you to give us a call here on Veterans Radio if you have a question or a comment for the doctor. Our number here locally is 734-822-1600, 734-822-1600, or you can call us toll-free at 844-838-1600, 844-VET-1600. And welcoming our guest to Veterans Radio right now, Dr. Charles Hoag, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Good evening.
Good evening, and thanks. How are things out in Washington?
Things are good. Things are good here. It's a nice day. I was out raking leaves today.
Good day to rake leaves. We've got to get rid of those leaves, right?
Exactly.
Tell me a little bit about how you, if you could tell me a little bit about your military service and how you became interested in studying post-traumatic stress.
I came into the Army actually as a general medical doctor, an infectious disease doctor, did a lot of research for the Army and during the 1990s, and then I decided, after sort of a little midlife crisis of sorts, to go back and study psychiatry, and I did that between 97 and 2000. And because I'd had quite a bit of research experience in general medicine and infectious diseases, the psychiatry consultant at that time asked me to start a small research program so that they could make more evidence-informed decisions And shortly after that, 9/11 hit, and we were positioned at Walter Reed Army Institute of Research to do research on the ground as the war unfolded. So it was a little bit of sort of fortuitous timing, and we had very good support from the leadership, which I think is unique in this war compared to past wars. So we had the opportunity to really look at the impact of the war as the war unfolded, and had the opportunity to continue research since the beginning of OIF and OEF.
I think just kind of to review with our audience, could you define what post-traumatic stress really is, as far as you're concerned?
Yeah, there's a medical perspective, and then it's also important to look at it more from the warrior perspective and occupational perspective. But from the medical perspective, what it is that when somebody has experienced, for instance, a combat, a significant combat event, or another traumatic event, when that event sticks with the person in their memory and affects their physiology, when they remember that event, and that event keeps coming back in the mind, and it kind of relentlessly may come back in the form of dreams or nightmares or intrusive thinking, and when that event sticks with the person and affects their life in a negative way after they get home, that's really when we start to talk about post-traumatic stress or post-traumatic stress disorder, if it's gotten to the point of really affecting the person's life in some way. There's a spectrum. Everyone is affected by their experiences of deployment. You can't not be affected, and it's normal to have some sense of hypervigilance and intrusive thinking when people come home, but if those types of reactions, that hypervigilance and that intrusive thinking persists and interferes with relationships or interferes with ability to do one's job or enjoy life, then that's really when we start to talk about sort of the normal reactions becoming reactions that need treatment.
When you talk about, is there a difference between post-traumatic stress for a warrior versus somebody who's in a car accident or somebody who's been assaulted?
Yes. The biggest difference is that for a warrior, they train to respond to critical events and traumatic events, and they train very, very hard for that. As individually, they train individually very hard and also as a team. And so it's more akin to other types of first responders like police and firefighters, and so their exposure to these events like significant combat events, these exposures are occurring in the context of their occupational duties, and they're not responding as a victim would respond, someone who is a civilian who's randomly assaulted or in a car accident is also going to be. May also be very significantly affected in their life by those experiences, but those are experiences that they did not train for. They don't have they don't have, for instance, a team around them who's also trained to respond to those experiences. So there's a difference in the way in which those experiences affect the person because of that occupational context.
Okay, I was trying to think. We were talking earlier, before we went on the air, about the difference between post-traumatic stress. We've got kind of this thing on our program. We're trying to get rid of the D. We like the idea of post-traumatic stress, but we think that, we'll get into this later with you, the people are labeled with post-traumatic stress disorder, and, a lot of times they won't go and seek the help that they need. And so we're trying to simplify it. I don't know if that'll work or not, but we're working on it.
Well, that gets into the whole thing of stigma, and the reality is, stigma is pervasive in society, and it's very pervasive in the military. We also know that men, are less apt to go seek care when they need it than women are, and the military, being a predominantly male organization, is is going to, you know, be less apt to go seek care just because of the fact that it's, you know, predominantly male. And so anything that can help to destigmatize and normalize and help people understand that, you know, there's a range of reactions that are perfectly normal, but that, you know, still it might be beneficial to get help for some of those things at times. And so that, you know, a lot of people have talked about dropping the D in the effort to destigmatize things. From the medical perspective, we still need to have clear definitions because knowing what you're treating and being able to clearly define what you're treating, you know, leads to the recommendation for correct treatment and also leads to insurance reimbursement if you're in a, you know, if you're seeking care, say, outside of the VA system and your insurance company is paying for that care. So there's a necessity to have the D in place from the medical perspective, and it's also important to understand the need for being able to sort of recognize that there are normal reactions where, you know, PTS, the sort of dropping the D, makes sense as well from the standpoint of helping to normalize things.
Well, I understand that. Of course, I didn't think about all the consequences that might go along with all the health care and stuff. If you don't have the D in there, then they're going to say, it doesn't count, so we're not going to cover it. But which is kind of interesting when you think about it. What about, and as your book goes through, and folks, I'm talking with Dr. Charles Hogue. His book is entitled Once a Warrior, Always a Warrior. And a quick story is that when I was in high school, we were warriors, quote unquote. It was our mascot. And so when I sent this whole thing out on Facebook and the rest of it, I got all these emails and stuff back from my college high school classmates going, oh, this is all about us, right? And I said, no, not really. It's about, you know, people that were in the military. And it turns out in my high school class, there were quite a few of us since we graduated in 1964 who ended up going into the service. And some of us have, you know, had a little problems as, you know, as we've gone along in life. Can you tell me the difference between the post-traumatic stress and the combat mild traumatic brain injury?
So, yeah, they're very different. But they get conflated. They often get discussed in, you know, the same context as if they're the same thing, and they're very, very different. So mild traumatic brain injury is what we also know as concussion. It's when you get a blow to your head that results in losing consciousness briefly, or your consciousness is changed in some way. You might be disoriented or see stars, you know, and if that's relatively brief, that kind of, you know, blow to the head that results in brief loss of consciousness, alteration of consciousness, is very common. You know, obviously happens frequently in sports, and it also happens frequently, it happens in training, military training, like combatives, and it happens out on the battlefield. And it's particularly notable during these wars because the most common cause of concussion on the battlefield has been the IED explosions. Blast-related concussions are very common. In that context, even though the pathology may be similar between a concussion on the battlefield and, say, a concussion that happens on a football field, even though the pathology itself may be similar, the context is very, very different, and people are affected to a much greater extent by a concussion when it occurs on the battlefield because of that context. And we also know that there's a strong correlation between concussions on the battlefield and post-traumatic stress disorder. And again, I think that's related to the context. When a blast occurs and you get knocked unconscious or you're disoriented or you lose your situational awareness on the battlefield, that's a very close call on your life. And often there are other casualties, which also has a tremendous impact on a unit when you lose a team member. And so these are not trivial events when they occur, and they can have fairly profound physical, cognitive, and psychological effects. And it's an important injury that, you know, has been recognized to a greater extent in this war than probably any period of time before now.
The descriptions that I have read about traumatic brain injury, especially from some of the veterans who have written about their experiences of when their Humvees are hit by an IED, and you know that not only is their head bounced around inside, but it's also it just knocks them totally out of the vehicle. And when they do come to, just as you mentioned, when they come to, or they're finally realizing what's going on around them, they turn and the first thing they see is either a buddy that has been blown apart or their Humvee is blown apart. So I can only imagine the connection between the two.
Yes, exactly. And that's why, these concussions are really, result in more significant health impacts when people come home. It's because these are not trivial injuries in that context.
Tom, we got about 45 seconds until we have to take
yes.
a break.
Quick question. Is there any interlap between the VA system and the brain injury model care systems on the civilian side in academic medicine?
Very, very strong connections and collaboration going on with a lot of the experts in sports concussion that are working with the VA and DOD on a lot of their programs. So, yes, absolutely.
Okay. On that note, we have to take a break. We'll be right back. We're talking with Dr. Charles Hoag. His book is Once a Warrior, Always a Warrior, and we're going to get to the idea of the transitioning portion of it so we can figure out how we can help these men and women coming back. We'll be right back. And we're back on Veterans Radio, and we're talking to Dr. Charles Hoag, retired colonel from the United States Army, and he has written a book entitled Once a Warrior, Always a Warrior, and you've got this really nice review here from Max Cleland, former United States Senator, VA Administrator. There's combat, then there's the rest of your life. This is the guide to surviving the war back here. We all need it. Hell of a book. That's a great review, Dr. Hoag.
Yes, I was very grateful, fortunate to have Max Cleland's support for this.
And there are many, many others that go along with this. I can't read them all. They're all they were what got me to read the book. So let's talk about now. We've defined post-traumatic stress. We've defined traumatic brain injury. Now let's talk about coming home. And you've got an interesting life survival skills here that you have included in your book. Can we talk about some of those?
Sure. Yeah.
Let's talk about our reflexes and we can't sleep.
Well, yeah. The reality, that's the biggest, that's really the biggest problem, I think, for service members when they come home, because their entire, what we call the circadian cycle, which is the entire physiological mechanisms that help us to sleep normally and get restful sleep, are disrupted in the operational environment, partly because, and particularly in infantry units, they're getting less than the normal 8 hours sleep a night. They're typically getting 5 to 6 hours sleep, and they're also trying to catch sleep during the daytime because they're doing a lot of nighttime missions. And so there's a cumulative toll, and oftentimes when folks come home, that translates into, waking up in the middle of the night at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning and not being able to get back to sleep, or feeling like you need to go, peruse the house and make sure all the doors are locked and everything's secure before you feel comfortable going back to bed and that sort of thing. So sleep is a big issue, and it's one of those physiological effects of war zone service that persists and really needs to be addressed when people come home.
Well, can you offer any suggestions, in the short term for maybe some people that are listening that are having difficulty sleeping and still patrolling the house 40 years later?
Yeah, I mean it's complicated because one size doesn't fit all. I mean,
right.
That's true really for a lot of the reactions that folks have, and a lot of these are normal reactions, but then when they persist, they can interfere with life. So, oftentimes we talk about you know, strategies that can be helpful, like having white noise, you know, like a circulating fan in your room, or turning off the TV, not using electronics for at least an hour or two before bed, because that visual stimulation actually can shut off melatonin production and reduce the restfulness of sleep. But everything has to be kind of individualized. Some people, for instance, actually use the TV for white noise. And so if a professional says don't have the TV on, that actually might not be the right advice for that particular individual. A big issue, of course, is a lot of folks, when they come home, they feel physiologically revved up, and they're having trouble sleeping, and then they start to use alcohol to help to get to sleep. And that actually can seem to be helpful at first, but the reality is it disrupts the sleep, what we call the sleep architecture, the way in which sleep functions, and particularly REM sleep, or the part of sleep that has to do with dreaming. And so the restfulness of the sleep isn't as good, and it ultimately can lead to tolerance and increasing problems with sleeping. So there's this sort of vicious cycle that a lot of folks get into. It's not just alcohol, but we're having a big problem now with opiate pain medications that are used because people also have injuries that they're treating, and other types of medications can interfere as well. So all of this has to kind of be looked at in a holistic way.
Well, you continue on in your book, Once a Warrior, Always a Warrior, to attend to and modulate your reactions. What do you mean by that?
So that a lot of these experiences are stored in the body. So, you know, if you're driving down the side of the road, I mean, a lot of folks, for instance, they may be driving down the side of the road and see trash on the side of the road, and they may have an instantaneous reaction to swerve the car out of the way, because when they were in Iraq and they were driving in Iraq or Afghanistan, trash was a source of IEDs. And that's a reflexive reaction. That's not a reaction that you think about, but it's a reflexive reaction that happens sort of instantaneously, and it might be associated with increased heart rate, increased muscle tension, and a change in the way in which one focuses on the environment, this sort of situational awareness shift. And so those are all physiological reactions, and so a big part of the transition is being able to modulate that physiology and essentially retrain the body to be able to, you know, be a little bit more relaxed, not have to feel like it has to react suddenly to these types of things, when these types of triggers when one comes home. And again, that's a very individualized thing. Some people, do things like yoga or meditation to calm the physiology. Others like to get outdoors and do, hunting or fishing or, sports or other types of activities that also helps with that physiological, transition process.
One of the things that you mentioned in that particular chapter of attend to and modulate your reactions was to notice your breathing. What did you mean by that?
Yeah, so breathing, when a lot of times when folks get triggered when they get back, maybe there's a crowd of people that they start to feel like the alertness goes up, and there's a sense that there might be a threat in that environment. And so oftentimes breathing will become shallow at that time. And so just being aware of one's breathing and how one's breathing is changing and how the body is changing in response to these reflexive reactions, and learning how to kind of control the breath. Service members do this. They learn to control their breath, for instance, in marksmanship training. So it's not unlike that kind of, that kind of experience of retraining the breath and to be able to kind of get the physiology to calm down. The nervous system is not just the brain, but it's the entire, peripheral nervous system that goes out and, gives us our senses and, skin and touch and so forth. But it's also the autonomic nervous system, which has to do with the parts of the nervous system that controls all the automatic functions like heart rate and breathing and digestion and so forth. And all of those get affected when somebody has been in, you know, and I'm not talking about everybody, but, you know, certainly a lot of folks who come back from combat or have had significant events, sometimes that those automatic processes in the body can be affected, the autonomic nervous system. And so there's a variety of techniques that people can do to sort of learn to modulate that reactivity.
Well, I want to remind our audience that we're talking with Charles Hogue, Colonel retired United States Army. His book is Once a Warrior, Always a Warrior, Navigating the Transition from Combat to Home. Inside each of these chapters, I wanted to let our audience know, is that you have these little kind of check sheets or checklists that you can go through to kind of evaluate your own situation. Do you agree?
Yeah, I tried to make it, you know, sort of user friendly and conversational, which was a challenge for me at first because I wasn't used to that style of writing, I was much more used to writing medical articles. But the problem I think with a lot of self help books is they sound like a medical professional, you know, writing to the veteran or, you know, at the veteran or at the person who, you know, who's interested in the book. And so I had to sort of retrain myself to have a more conversational style. And what was interesting about that was it led me to change the way in which I communicate with my patients as well. That, you know, sometimes just having a more, you know, I think sometimes medical professionals kind of get into a rut of talking from their medical perspective and not really putting seeing things from the other points of view. For instance, you know, when we talk about symptoms of PTSD like hypervigilance or anger or sleep disturbance or re-experiencing of thoughts and emotions related to these experiences, all of these are actually beneficial adaptive functions which, you know, soldiers, service members in a combat zone learn to hone, and they're actually effective skills. So symptoms are also skills, and that's something which a lot of people don't realize. I've seen a lot of guys who have very significant PTSD symptoms, and they're really struggling back here at home, but they're still the guys that you want on your team downrange. They're highly proficient and highly effective at what they do in the combat environment. And that's sort of a paradox. You know, we think about these things as, you know, a medical condition that's completely negative, but that's not the way the human physiology is. This is about, you know, effective management in very threatening situations. And when somebody becomes good at that, that can have a downside in that it can affect their life when they get home, but it also is a beneficial function as well.
Right.
So that's, you know, that's something which has been, I've had to learn it as time's gone on.
Well, I think it's really important. Tom, you had a comment here?
Yes. From a practical standpoint, here locally, we have a Camp Liberty, which is used for taking veterans and putting them in the outdoors, hunting, fishing, that sort of thing. Is that a good way for many of our veterans to reconnect in a positive way? What's your thoughts?
Absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, so many veteran organizations that have programs like that. And anything that helps veterans to connect with each other and feel and have a sense of community and have a sense of support and have somebody who they can, you know, pick up the phone and call when they're having a difficult day or a challenging day, you know, anything which connects veterans to each other it can be very, very beneficial. And again, you know, one size doesn't fit all. You know, some people need mental health treatment or medical treatment, and others, you know, need, you know, everyone I think needs the support of their family and their community, and only, you know, only a smaller percentage of people need professional help, and so all of those programs can be very beneficial.
Well, I think what's really interesting about your book is that you include narratives from veterans themselves. Especially looks like First Sergeant Mike Schindler is one that we see constantly throughout the story. We've only got a couple of minutes left, Doctor, and I apologize for that. And I'd really like to have you back on the program. Where can people go to get your book and find out more information?
It's available on Amazon and other booksellers, so it's readily available. And I'm happy to come back on the show. I appreciate the invitation. It's been enjoyable speaking with you about this.
I like I said, there's so much more to be included in here, and I encourage people to go in there. When we do get you back on, I want to talk about narrating your story. I think that's an important chapter to get. That's what we try to do every week here on Veterans Radio, is to get people to tell their story. So we'll see if we can work out something together. Thank you so very much for being on Veterans Radio. Once again, Dr. Charles Hoge, Colonel, retired United States Army. The book is Once a Warrior, Always a Warrior, Navigating the Transition from Combat to Home. I strongly encourage folks out there to get this book, whether you need it or the person that lives in your house needs it. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. We're going to take a quick break here, and I'm encouraging you all to stay tuned, because as much as that book was really helpful, the song that's going to be coming up after our break is by a young lady, Sarah Stevens. You don't want to miss this. We'll be right back after these messages. That is Sarah Stevens, 15 years old. I was blown away when I received this song, and I want to welcome Sarah to our program. Sarah, welcome to Veteran Radio.
Thank you so much. I'm so glad to talk to you.
This is really exciting. I don't know if you're excited more than I am.
I'm very excited.
You're only 15. When did you start singing? How did you get discovered that you had this amazing talent?
Well, I started singing when I was 3, and I was introduced to a lot of the classics by my grandmother, who I call Nanny. And I guess, you know, as I grew, it just kind of clicked with me, because I love singing and music and performing, and I just love it.
Well, you certainly got the talent here, and it sounds a little bit like you may be from down south somewhere.
Yes, I'm from Marietta, Georgia.
Okay.
Yes.
So how did you, I guess, what was the motivation for this particular song? This is really powerful. We're going to play the whole thing through before the end of the program. So, folks, you got to stick around for this. So what was your motivation for this particular song?
Well, I had, on TV, I had seen these images of how these military moms and dads, how they were reuniting with their kids. And it was such a beautiful but real thing, and it really touched me. So my mom and I sat down, and we got a pencil and a paper, and we wrote a poem about this. And about a year later, it became Promise.
Did you write the music also?
No, my producer, Paul Schwartz, wrote it, and we gave it to him, and he's like, I can do something, and it just came together, and it's a great song.
It is a great song, and I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to play this whole song through. It runs about 4 minutes long, and I want our audience to stick around, and I want you to stick around, too, because I want to talk to you when we're finished, okay?
Sounds good to me.
Okay, so this is Sarah Stevens, and the song is called Promise.
I was just
Wow. Sarah, that is an amazing song. What an amazing talent.
Oh, thank you.
I think the handkerchiefs are being passed around in our
well,
studio.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much.
Wow. What a remarkable talent, and I know that you've heard that before, but all right, so how does our audience get this song? That's Sarah Stevens, by the way. She's 15 years old. The song is called Promise. How do we get a hold of that song?
Well, my website is sarahstevensmusic.com, and Promise is actually on iTunes, and November is Military Family Appreciation Month.
Right.
So all of the proceeds in November are going to the military. And you can get it on iTunes, YouTube, Facebook, and my website.
I'm sorry, I'm stuck. I'm not normally a stutterer at getting along with these words out. But you've got a lot of other amazing music. If you go to her website, sarahstevensmusic.com, there's a lot of samples of her music on there, and each one it seems to be better and better than the rest. And I'm taken by the idea. We need to get you to have a CD out there so we can promote this. You get the CD, Sarah?
Those are my hopes. We're working on things right now, and I just want to say this. I've got such an incredible family, my mom and my grandparents, and a musical team, and we're all just working together. But those are the plans.
Well, let us know if there's anything that we can do. We'll write you a review. We'll write you a check. I don't care what it is.
Oh, my gosh.
We'll be more than
much.
Happy to help you out. Sarah Stevens, go to sarahstevensmusic.com. Folks, you've got to listen to this song. I watched it on her website. You can watch it on YouTube. It's a very powerful, powerful song and so appropriate for this time of year and just appropriate whenever. I think this is going to become a classic, Sarah, and I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for recording this.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. It's just an honor talking to you and to all of y'all. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Sarah. We'll have you back on with your next tune.
Okay. Thank you so much.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, folks. Another one is in the can, as they say. Next week coming up, we're going to have veteran to veteran, buddy to buddy, and mate for mate. So make sure that you tune in. Until then, you are dismissed.